a chisel hole in that chimney on two sides, big enough to put a 6x6 timber in through. And then I set one end on a block, and then I put a jack screw on the other and put my level on it, and I had the one on the block a little high, and then I put the jack screw on it and the level, and I screwed it up, and I made a mark on the wall in the kitchen, on the wallpaper, and that like where the chimney was, and I jacked it till I made that whole chimney move that mark a little bit. And I said, well, we can take the floor out from under now, and the chimney's resting on this timber. And so we cut the floor out, and he done a marvelous job with that. He come and laid the brick and put the tile in. It had tile in it. He come up with his block in the cellar, up with the tile, and when he got up, he measured the distance and made a little less mortar in between the brick and come up. And when he put the last layer in, he had to tap them in pretty hard. And after it set a couple days, we took the jack screw out, and that never lowered that mark on the wall a bit. And so then I had a furnace put in and put doors on, and it was all, the inside wall was cemented, and I used to keep my car down there, and I had room for a lot of wood for the furnace down there. And I put, and then I went and put a bathroom in, tub and shower, and put a bathroom in, and we tore out what was a pantry and made the pantry and another storeroom that they had, made it into a bedroom, and in between the bedrooms was the bath, and then the kitchen and the living room, and that's the way we picked up the old house.
That's terrific.
And it was a nice old place.
Yeah, it must have been hard to sell it, I would think.
Oh, we hated to, but I was getting older, and I was having during that time in 1966, in the 60s rather, everything had to get bigger. Prices are going up and this and that, and you had to produce more to,
yes,
to live, see? And in the meantime, I bought this additional farm, which was the Eddie farm. That woman came down and told me, her brother passed away and her husband passed away, and they sold the farm to somebody that young people couldn't make a go of it. So my neighbor Ed Conant and I bought that whole farm together, and we split it up. He had part of it, I had part of it. That's where I got the additional acreage from what it was when I bought it. And so I got so I could keep more cows. In the meantime, I was renting part of up this way about a couple of miles, Pete Jakes lost his barn. And so he wasn't going to build again, and so I rented part of his farm so I could have forage enough to keep more cows, see. And so I got bigger, and then in 63, they was crowded about, couldn't use basement barns anymore for sanitation. And so I built a new barn. 86 feet long, and you saw the picture of the inside with 40 milkers, 20 on the side, and put in a trench cleaner and bulk tank, and I got that. So when I sold out, I had 47 milkers that went to the place, and I think it was 18, 19 heifers, and two tractors. Baler, of course, when I went down, there was no tractor, no balers or anything else, and I had all modern machinery that you needed to use, and spreaders and everything else. And so when I sold out, that's what I sold out.
Now, you used horses for a while.
Yes, I used horses. I used all horses. When I bought in 42, I used horses for everything until 1947, I bought a second-hand Ford tractor, and I used horses and tractor some together then. And then in 1950, I stopped using horses only for sugaring to gather sap with. And then I got a better tractor, and from that I kept getting more stuff. So when I sold out, I had two tractors, baler, and everything to do with. So, and
it's quite a story.
So it made quite a difference on the farm, and so I.
Well, it's interesting to me to hear the changes and how people made them.
Yeah.
What a difference electricity made.
Oh, yeah. And that place, they hadn't had electricity only a few years before that, that place.
Now, did your father's place, did Lauren put in electricity? Or?
Yeah. My father, just before I left home, he bought a Delco plant, made his own electricity, 32 volts, down in the basement of the barn, set up, made a room and sealed it up, and had this little engine run and generator and batteries, had Delco batteries, and she charged it. And well, we thought we had it made when we got that, because we'd been for that. We had to, every time we went to the barn at night, we had to carry a lantern in our hand. We went to the barn, and we had different hooks in the ceiling to hang the lanterns on. And, of course, well, they didn't have too many fires of wonder, but, a lantern is bad, and sometimes they don't burn good or something, and get tipped over or something. But Dad was always pretty careful that every lantern wants to sit down somewhere, so it had to hang up, which was a good thing. And then when he got that Delco plant, boy, we thought we was in heaven, because go in and turn a button, we had electricity. And so, but we never had any milking machine or anything when I lived home. But, and then of course my brother, they'd run the farm, and then when Lauren bought him Dad out, he had the electricity available then, and he had the place all wired and put in electric lights. And of course, I guess I told you they had to have a telephone. They had to run their own wire. But Lauren wired it up and had everything with modern electricity and so on and so forth.
Boy, the difference all that must have made.
Oh, quite a difference.
And you must have... it must have been almost awe when, you went from a lantern to being able to throw a switch.
I know it. Boy, you can't imagine how great we thought that was. Boy, we was on top of the world. And then that's Carolina in the morning. There were times, believe it or not, a kerosene lantern, you know what they're like, probably. And the wind used to blow up there on Pulio sometimes in the wintertime, and snow blushing, and after another thing Dad did that I didn't like to do, we'd do up our chores at night, clean the stables and water and feed them. And then we had to go to hell and have supper, and in our supper, cold, windy, get your clothes on, go down and do your milking. Well, after I farmed, I always done everything before I come in for supper. When I got through supper, I could take my overall and things off and eat my supper and the rest of the evening with myself. But that's one way Dad did it. But you know, some of the time, them kerosene lanterns, Mother used to keep them clean and new wicks in them and everything. But the times when we were trying to carry a lantern to go from my house to the barn, the wind blew, so to blow the thing lantern out. And we'd have to go back to the house and go into the house and get a match and light it up again. And then when we went to the barn, we'd try to carry the lantern kind of in front of us so the wind wouldn't get out so much till we got into the barn. And boy, I'm telling you, the wind and snow would fly up on that hill, something terrible at times. It was pretty good when we got into that new barn. You didn't feel the wind. That barn was warm and it was all built, boarded, and then papered under it, and then clapboarded. And all the cattle in there, good night, was nice and warm, sit down. Quite a treat.
What's the worst storm you ever remember up there?
Gosh. Well, I don't know if I can think of any one in particular, except we used to have some lot of bad snowstorms, a lot of snow come, and then the wind blow and drift it. And sometimes it take nearly a day to get shoveled out and rolled so we could get the road from the house down to the village. And one time we had a bad storm. My mother, in first of February, she was had pneumonia, and we had a nurse who come stayed with her 24 hours a day. And of course, then pneumonia was a dangerous thing because they didn't have drugs and fever, and the way to handle pneumonia, I don't know what they give them that like, but it had to run till the fever went down. And then when the fever went down, well, then they were going to live. And after the fever went down, then people would be so weak, and they stayed in bed, and mother in bed. And we had a big snowstorm come one night, and then the wind blew and drifted the roads. And Dr. Warren, had to come see my mother twice a day. And that morning, there was no way of getting there with a horse and sleigh, so he took his little case and jumped, put a saddle, and he would come my horse back. You know, the doctors, they wouldn't even come to your house, you're dying. But he came up there and treated my mother, and she came out of it. But that was one of the bad storms. I don't remember how much snow we got, but it was a bad storm, and I know it took us nearly a day after chores with the four horses on the roller, and I and my brother and, Claren was home at that time. And we all shovels went down through, and we had to do a lot of shoveling. The drift was drifted up so high that you couldn't put the horses through them. You had to shovel it and lower them down some before you could put the horses through. And so I was quite excited.
Did you used to get, you told me your mother used to go out
She was, I don't know what you call her. She used to go a lot of time, people went to the house when they were going to have a baby. And she'd be like a nurse, you know, I don't know what you call them.
Practical nurse, I guess, and, or midwife.
Midwife, yeah. And she used to do that. And there again, I don't know how in the world, but money was hard to get hold of, and bringing up the kids and that like. And then one winter for a long time, took on an old fellow down the village, Mr. Lyford. He used to run the hotel, a little hotel in Warren Village. And he was bad off, and she went down there days for quite a long time and helped to take care of him when he was real bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then she'd come home and cook up stuff, and we'd get our own meals. And that was one thing Lauren, my brother, was awfully good at. He was about like a woman. He could come in the house and he could get things around on the table and do some cooking and get the meals. My father was the most unhandy man around the house that you ever saw. As I heard Mother say, he couldn't boil water without burning it. Well, that was his life. She said many times, she said, if he had to live alone, she said, I hope he never had to, something happened, he had to live alone, because he said he'd starve to death. He couldn't do anything to feed himself. He was about right. I don't know, he couldn't do anything like that, but outside stuff.
Were there any bad sicknesses or accidents?
Well, yes, of course, they had some, and not particularly. One is, this might be a quite interesting story about Pearly, the boy my folk brought up. I don't know whether Earl ever told you about it or not.
Earl never did. I have heard, you know, that he was very badly hurt at some point, but I never heard the whole story.
Well, Pearly, I don't know how old he was when he, what happened to his folks. He was Pearly Atkins, and he was a half-brother to Bell. So, of course, Bell was made her home there, and so then Pearly says, well, I don't know what happened to his folks. I can't remember because it's before my day, really. But anyway, he was a young fella. I don't know just how old he was, 17, 18, 19, somewhere along in there. And he was up helping my Uncle Amsey thrashing. And so my Uncle Amsey, Dad always said it was, like I mentioned, one for a gommin. sloppy. It used to make my dad so disgusted to see him go drive down with the horses with the pole straps on and a pair of horses hitched up to have them in the loops. They were dangling around, and he wore, in old days they used to wear lace-up leather with their rubber parts and leather tops. He'd have one, two of the hooks hooked up, and then he'd skip all the rest of them and come to the top one and tie a knot, and then the strings would be hanging down, slopping around. And Dad said, I don't see how anybody can go around with sloppy stuff. Every harness that Dad had, and I'm really a chronic, about to go to a show and see people the way they're hitched up and everything, I just drive me crazy, because that's the way I was brought up. Well, so never should have happened. And nobody should ever try to reach over a belt and do something on a machine when it's running. That's dangerous. You know, clothes or catch and that like. But anyway, he was, Pearly was reached over the belt. It was spinning. To oil some bearing. And that belt caught his clothes. And stripped them. And, well, plain speaking, you can cut it off the tape when you make it up to one of them, but tore his testicles right off. And why that fella didn't bleed to death, nobody knows. And it ripped his clothes off and that like, except the bandage around his neck stayed, but it stripped him, you know. And so they wrapped some clothes around him and that like, and he stood up, he never faded away, he stood up in the back of a buggy, and they brought him down to my mother. Somebody helped hold him, but he couldn't sit down, you know, and they had him wrapped up, I guess, with towels and a blanket, and stood up in the back of a buggy and rode down to my mother. And my mother, being what she was, did him up and cleaned him up the best she could, and they took him to Roxbury, and put him on a train and went to Burlington. And they picked him up and that man lived.
How old was he when that happened?
About 19 years old.
Shit.
And now I'm telling you how that ever, that man ever lived from it, nobody knows.
The pain of it.
Why? And, but he came out of it and lived a good long time, but it made his whole life different. He never had hardly any whiskers. He had just a few, so he once in a while would have to shave a few places, but his face was smooth like a lady's face. But it hurt his disposition. He was, what his dad says, he wanted to blame for it. Mm-hmm. But it affected him, I suppose, and not like it, so that he'd have days, he was the most irritable fellow to get along with. He wouldn't, you couldn't please him if, no matter. Well, we got used to him and that like, and then later on he got up, went by himself, and he worked out and worked for people, and well, I guess probably he maybe was a little different with other people, you know. And he worked for years driving the horses, pulling lumber and stuff for Pliny Parker or Roxbury. A good handle horses, a good caretaker, and but he never got married. And
how long did it take for him to recover?
Well, that I don't remember. I don't remember.
He was how much older than you?
Well, see, he was. Let me stop and think. He was. Pearly was. About, I think Pearly was around 9 or 10 years older than Earl. Earl was born in 1888, and Pearly was born, well, he was 8 years. Pearly was born in 1880. And
so you weren't born
no,
at this point?
No, no. All I'm telling you is I didn't see it,
yeah.
I didn't know anything about it. And in that picture, of a dad in front there, Pearly over the back of the horse.
Mm-hmm.
Well, apparently that is after that it happened. because it was going to somebody come there and go and take a picture in those old-fashioned way they had put what the mule be when I got over it and I saw going to take a picture and the fella set up his tripod and then he got put his head under a black sheet and I wondered why he had to do that. Well, they were having the picture taken, Earl and Lauren and the little dog, and Pearlie had over back of the horse standing there. And if you looked over close, he threw his hat on the ground back there, and he didn't want his picture taken. And Dad said, "You step up around." So he wouldn't. So he went around back of the horse just to see his head. But he was, you know, that way. He wanted him to do something, he didn't want to do it. And so, but I don't know how long he was in the hospital or anything about it, but hell, that man ever lived.
It's just incredible.
It is.
Well, he didn't. None of the modern drugs, none of the painkillers. Can you imagine?
And, well, you just stop and think of it. It's serious. Why he didn't bleed to death?
Well, I know.
And he had on rubber boots, and when he got him down to my mother's there, this is what I heard told me, he had enough blood, so when they took his boots off, they poured blood right out of him. And my mother, being what she was, she taped him up or tied him up with blankets or pads or sheets or what, I don't know, and then they wrapped him up. And imagine the time, and take him by horse over 7 miles over to Roxbury and put him on the train and go to Burlington, and from the train get him out there and take him to the hospital.
It's incredible.
And he came home and lived through it and lived till he was quite an old man.
Just incredible. Yeah, that is a...
That is something that an ordinary person wouldn't hardly believe it, but it's the truth. That's the truth. But as I say, it affected the disposition. But we knew what had him. Now, this is funny. When I come up from Lynn, rented John Lyon's farm, he was a good-hearted fella. He thought everything of me. I don't know why. He gave me a lot of things. In fact, I've got a Waltham watch. The one trouble with Pearlie, he'd give him, if he had an extra dollar and he'd like somebody, he'd give him everything he had. And my folk tried, but he'd do just his money. It's my money. I've got an old stem wine watch, Waltham. I think it's 21 jewels that he gave me when I was a young kid. And things like that, you know, good-hearted. Well, anyway, when I moved on the farm, I in Rochester, and went there, and of course, I bought cows, because there was only one cow, because John sold out, and I bought my herd, and I needed the help, because I had a sugar place was up above there, and we tapped, I think, between 12 and 1,300 taps, and the evaporators weren't too modern, even back in 27, so we had two evaporators in the sugar house. Had one that boiled, when you get down to a certain point, we used to draw it off in that evaporator and finish it up in the other one. So we had to have help. At any rate, Pearlie came down. He'd been working somewhere and didn't have a job. He came down and to see me. Pearlie always liked me, because I guess I was the youngest kid and he'd do everything for me. And he said, "Well, no, if I could use some help." And I said, "Yes, I can." And he had a horse at the time. And I hadn't been there long. This was before the flood. And in November. And so he went to work for me, and I hired him. And of course, in the meantime, Gertrude, when she's up there somewhere, not like she knew about how he was, and I told her. And he was awful good to Gertrude. He was nice to her. And so I said, "We got to handle him. If he don't want to do something, I'm not going to let him know. I hadn't got to." So anyway, while he worked there, this was funny. I don't remember just what happened. Something came up. And he'd tell me that he had before. He'd get discussed with me and tell me I was the meanest man he ever worked for. And this particular time, I don't know. I don't remember. I didn't pay no attention. And he was going to get through, so he went up to health. He packed up his suitcase, and Gertrude felt kind of bad. She says, "What have you done? You shouldn't have." I said, "I don't remember now what's on." And she said, he isn't going to stay. And she said, too bad. And I said, don't worry. I said, he ain't going to leave. She said, he isn't. Well, shit, he packed. I said, that's all right. She told me this while he'd gone down the suitcase to his buggy. And he didn't get his horse cleaned up and harnessed. And so I said, don't worry. I said, he ain't leaving. I said, he is. He took suitcase. Well, I paid no attention to him. He cleaned up his horse, harnessed it, hitched it up. And I went down by there to say goodbye to him. And he got all in there, and I liked it. I said, well, goodbye, Pearlie. Thanks for all the things you've done. I appreciate it. And I said, take care of something. I don't know. Talk to him. And he sat there a few minutes. Next thing you know, he jumped out, started unhitching the horse. Not a word said. Put the horse back in, went to work.
Did it affect his brain at all, or?
No, I don't think so, because he was...
Just totally...
Just the nerves or something, you know, a decision. And evidently, I don't remember the time, but something I had on him to do he didn't want to do, and he flew mad and told me I was the meanest man he ever worked for and all that, and he was not going to stay there any longer, and I said, okay, go ahead. Mm. And I paid him what I owed him. Packed up, and then he never got all hitched up, and then next I knew he was off on hitching, put the horse in the barn. I didn't say a word, mentioned it. I went back up to Hilton, he put the horse in, and I said, Gertrude, I told you one. She said, he didn't leave, and I said, no, he put the horse back in. What did you say? I said, I didn't say anything to him, just said, I wished him goodbye and wished him well. But the poor fellow wanted to blame for it.
Ah, well, can you imagine going through anything like that? It's an incredible story.
You know, this was funny and short. While he was there that winter, I was getting out some wood and logs. Well, there was some big maples up there that they cut. I don't know why they cut it. They left it a good log for wood. It was a big one. So we went up with the horse, and he loved to drive horses, so he'd drive the horses. And he was good to handle horses. And so we rolled this big log onto the bobsled. It was a big one. Oh, it must have been 3.5 foot through the top end, 12 foot long. It stuck up on the bobsled pretty big. We got it on and chained it. I said, go ahead down. He said, no, drive your own damn horses. I'm not driving. What's the matter? God, I ain't driving. You want to dig down, I'm gonna. He didn't have the most courage on anything that's a little dangerous. Because that log looked so big to him, he wouldn't drive them horses down off the, we call it the mounted, on that bobsled. Okay, so I get up and take the horse and dug it down. And we went down, unloaded it, came back, put on a load of other logs. Nothing said. When he got loaded up, he walks up and takes the blankets off the horses and pulls them up and throws them on the load and picks up the reins and away he goes.
Yeah. Well, there must have been some bad logging accidents, too, I would think.
Oh, yes, yes. There was. That one was. Now, over on that Dan Cardle place that my dad bought afterwards, years before I was born. But a fellow was bobbing logs down through to come out on the Route 100. And somehow he pulled a lot of logs, and it was got a little slippery or something. And the load slewed off. I don't know just what happened, but I heard him tell about it. And he got thrown, broke his neck, killed him. Yeah. So they did have bad accidents, and then a lot of people used to have, I've heard my mother tell about different ones getting badly hurt in the woods with an axe, glance off and cut their leg and, you know, those kind of things, because they didn't have chainsaws. Everything was a cross cuts on that line. And I'll tell you about an accident and things I went through with. It was kind of, one amusing at the time. I was that winter, that year, Gertrude's folks was living, her folks come up and they stayed till after Christmas. Over in the Dan Cardle house, And so, of course, Gertrude, we was going together, and she was, that's why she, they stayed up one night. And I was going to take the cream to the creamery. And she was coming over cross lots to go with me, because she liked to go with me everywhere else I went for some reason. And so, so anyway, I had this four-year-old mare that I'd, well, I got it from Dad, of course, because he raised a lot of them, and quite often I'd have one, I'd get it grown up and get the training come, you know, but I'd train it spare time, you know, and I'd like it. And then we'd have a young colt or something come along from a mare I like, of course, I'm young, and I'd say to Dad, boy, I'd like the soft pad for this other one. Well, I trade him, there's no money exchange, just Dad say, well, if you'd rather have Adam, have Adam. Well, of course, he got the best end of the deal because I'd handle the other one, got it going good. But anyway, I had this little mare. She was a nice little, once a little, but she was a nice little driving mare, spirited. And so driving, beautiful and that like. And so the last few times that I used her, I says, well, I'm going to use the lighter harness instead of the regular harness that we drive them in. I was young and I wanted, when I went into the village, wanted things to look kind of nice, and she was pretty prompt. So I put the light harness on her, and I'm going to take the cream in the old pung sleigh. And so a few days before that, sometime before that, Lorne tried a colt going downtown, and something happened and he broke off the road, or something got off the road a little, and to get the roller road built up to get back on the road, he had to line it. When he did, he got his front leg over the end of the shaft, broke the shaft off. Colt didn't do no harm or anything, but so Dad always had up over in the horse barn up overhead extra shafts and sleigh runners and whatnot. And so he went up and brought down another set of shafts and put into the sleigh. Well, on the shafts for the whole